science-backed lessons and opportunities to meet online with trained parenting coaches. Hale says parents can work through the program at their own pace and meet with counselors on their own time, allowing them to multitask if needed.
That kind of squeezing it into life is not really possible when we think of traditional mental health or even like kind of telehealth Zoom sessions.
The next step, says Hales, is to gauge the effectiveness of the program over a longer period of time with trained providers who aren't involved in the research. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 27th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and Ed Travaglia. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Mike Moen, Terry D., Suzanne Potter, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Ed Travaglia. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio, Why Oregon Needs an Environmental Rights Amendment.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. So this is our first episode of 2025, and while we brace for the tidal wave of insanity coming our way on the federal level, we're also preparing for Oregon's biennial legislative session. If you don't know, Oregon only has a full legislative session in odd years, meaning 2025 will be a big year for Oregon politics and policy. Oregon's session runs from late January through late June, but most of the important opportunities for public input happen early in February and March. I've been tracking a lot of bills as the session approaches, and I will do my best to highlight as many as possible as the session goes on. For instance, we'll have an episode coming up with my partners in the Oregon Ocean Alliance focusing on ocean and estuary protections, and I'll also be highlighting forest and climate bills as well. Speaking of which, today I'm speaking with Linda Perrine of the Oregon Coalition for an Environmental Rights Amendment, or OCERA. OCERA is a coalition of over 30 groups pushing for a constitutional amendment to enshrine the right to a healthy environment into Oregon law. Before we get started, as always, my email is michael@coastrange.org. I'd love to know what you think of the show and what you want us to cover this year. Okay, Linda, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of what you all do at the Coast Range Association. And I'm a fellow coastal dweller here in Lincoln City. So I live out on the coast. And I'll just hit some of the highlights of my background, which includes I actually worked for NASA as a space shuttle systems engineer back in the 80s down in Houston, and then moved out to California and became an environmental educator at an outdoor school. I did that for about 10 years. And then I moved to Eugene to run my own organic farm because that was something on my bucket list, essentially, as I wanted to really do that. And so I ran the farm that was called Honor Earth Farm for 13 years out on Highway 58.
Wow.
I have a deep connection to the earth. and I'm deeply troubled with the multiple planetary crises we face today. I stepped up to launch the OSERA campaign due to my decades of environmental activism, proving we have not produced results fast enough, and we need the law on our side to give the people of Oregon standing in court to hold our government to account for action or inaction that's causing harm.
Well, thank you for that. Man, I would love to hear more about all the different paths you've walked in your life sometime. But let's dive into OSERA, and could you just give us kind of that elevator pitch of who OSERA is and a couple brief sentences about the campaign, and then we'll dive into the particulars.
Sure. So OSERA stands for the Oregon Coalition for an Environmental Rights Amendment. We launched this back in September of 23, actually. It's coalesced into this statewide campaign that we refer to as OSERA. And we're working for the right to a healthy environment as a constitutional amendment to be referred to the ballot by a legislative referral in the 2025 session.
So let's talk more about the Environmental Rights Amendment. Go a little more in depth. What is the problem you're solving for here?
So there are a number of problems, which we can get into some examples around Oregon if you want to, but yeah. Let's start with what the amendment first states, which is our right, our proposed right. And quoting from our amendment, it says, "All people, including children and future generations, have the fundamental right to a clean, safe, and healthy environment, period. The state shall protect and restore this right equitably for all people, giving the highest priority to the safety and health of children and future generations." So not only are we trying to protect every living individual today in Oregon, but also future generations, which has, when it comes to the environment, harm that is caused to the environment can be a problem for many generations going forward. And we've really not addressed that type of situation in most of the law in the United States. So we're sort of pushing new grounds from that standpoint. Additionally, we learned here in Oregon through a 2011 Our Children's Trust youth lawsuit that they brought a suit against Governor Kate Brown, that the court decision stated that the people of Oregon only have standing for surface or groundwater contamination as a public trust, but no other aspect of the environment's covered in our law or in our constitution that gives people legal rights to address air pollution, harm to ecosystems, actions or inactions by the state government pertaining to any climate or environmental issue. So the amendment is trying to bring these rights to the people so that we can hold our government to account. It isn't a fair playing field, if you will, if we expect the citizens of Oregon to sue some of the largest polluters or largest harm causers in the state. They're likely to lose from a just financial side of things. Mm-hmm. And it's the government's job to really be dictating the terms that business can do business in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, though there are a number of things, and if you want to go into some examples, I can offer a few from around the state.
Let's get into that in a minute. And I just wanted to, you know, record an observation from what you were saying, that it is, whether you want to call it a bug or a feature of our laws, that, you know, we have to show harm, but corporations don't have to show benefit. The presumption is we allow any project to go forward as long as it benefits, you know, some usually wealthy entity. And there is no presumption of a right to clean drinking water, to a healthy future, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, the need for something like this is glaringly obvious.
It's about being a good neighbor, right? That's what this comes down to.
Good neighbor, a good ancestor, yeah.
There shouldn't be a right to pollute, period. You know, we're not there to tell individual landowners what they can and can't do with their land, but we are trying to set a baseline expectation that if you're going to do business or industry activities that involve the environment in Oregon, that you cannot harm your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And it should apply to the companies and corporations that work in Oregon as well.
Yeah. So let me ask a couple questions that I think will lead into those examples that you're about to go into. So first, just briefly, why a state constitutional amendment? And then how does this amendment start to address some of these problems that we're discussing?
Okay. So a state constitutional amendment is a fundamental right. We don't currently have environmental rights in our U.S. Constitution to fall back on. There's nothing there either. So if we're going to have this fundamental right to a healthy environment, then it's probably got to start in the state. And actually, this is going on around Oregon. around the U.S., where there are four states currently with language in their constitution to declare environmental rights, including Pennsylvania, Montana, Hawaii, and New York. And then there's another 18 states working on doing just what we're doing. And we're one of those 18 states, is to add a new amendment to the Constitution to declare these rights.
Well, I think this is a perfect time for us to go into some of those real world examples you were about to touch on.
Sure. So let's see. I'll start with the Morrow County groundwater problem. That problem has been going on for quite some time, up to 30 years, over many administrations, many legislative sessions. And it took some recent, really public news to put a spotlight on that, I'd say, to get the governor as well as the legislature to begin to consider some kind of action. But, you know, is it an expedient response? Are they dragging their feet? Are they setting an expectation of bringing the water back to clean, actual clean levels and health? There are any number of varying remedies that could happen in there. And we're trying to state that it is the expectation of the people that they have the right to a safe and healthy source of water, source of air, a stable climate, and thriving ecosystems. All of those words are in our language.
So how would that change? How would that groundwater contamination, which actually we've done some interviews on this program around some of the giant CAFOs that are causing mm-hmm. that contamination in large part, how would this amendment impact that situation that would be different than what we're seeing today?
Right. So when you actually get into a court, you bring a lawsuit as a plaintiff, you bring it to court, you have the defendant, then the courts are making decisions on expert witnesses, the best available science, the other laws that are on the books, whether they be federal or state. They're looking at precedents around the country. If you look at what happened recently, and this is on a different question you were going to pose, but the state of Montana, the youth lawsuit that happened there, the Supreme Court just sided with the youth that the state of Montana was causing harm to their futures with carbon emissions. And the way that that lawsuit was won was by bringing just expert witnesses from all over the globe to actually explain that, yes, our climate is changing. It is known to be due to human activity and carbon emissions. And all of that evidence was presented in court. On the other side of that argument, from the state of Montana, they didn't bring any witnesses to rebut any of that evidence. Because if they did, they probably would have been found to be not credible. But also, they just don't have an argument to make to base continuing to produce carbon emissions at the level the state was doing as qualifying for a safe and constitutionally clean environment that Montana has in its constitution.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing up. I was going to ask about other states, and that is a really interesting example. But just sticking with Oregon and kind of like envisioning a future where the Environmental Rights Amendment is law of the land in Oregon, could you walk me through another example of how it could be applied to the decision-making processes of state agencies, either for current industry or maybe a proposed project?
Sure. I would bring up another example. We have some folks from Rockaway Beach that are supporting us in the coalition. And I don't know if you're familiar with their situation, but Rockaway Beach had its drinking water drainage coming out of timberland clear cut. And this was, I don't remember the year that happened in, but they had to remedy it because their water became instantly undrinkable. So it was full of silt, it was full of wood debris, it was bringing down all kinds of things from the hillside that the water used to come down in a clean form. The city of Rockaway Beach tried to bring this to the attention of the Board of Forestry and their legislators and the governor, and really did not get an offer of assistance to deal with this. So they ended up over several years having to fundraise on their own through grant money, $250 million to create a new drinking water processing facility that could clean that water up to drinking level quality. The fact that we know, I mean, I live in a city that has water coming out of forest land, and I think most of the coastside cities do. So it could happen to any of us, and we have currently no recourse.
Right.
And that has to change. I mean, it shouldn't be a cost to a city to have to generate $250 million to redo a water treatment plant because they've been harmed by their neighbor, their next door property owner neighbor.
So in that case, would then the onus be on the timber company, who again, in this instance, as far as we know, was breaking no laws. They were operating completely within the letter of the law in harvesting timber on property that they own. The onus would be on them to not destroy or impound or whatever the technical term is, that drinking water, or would that just help the city after the fact have a remedy for that situation?
No, the goal with the amendment is to make it preventative.
Great, got it.
Not
okay.
Cleaning up a mess after it's happened.
Yeah.
It is meant to, again, I'll go back to the good neighbor policy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to tell the timber industry what they can and can't do. What we do want to hold them to is an expectation that they cause no harm to the neighbors that they are amongst.
Mm-hmm.
So they are property owners with other property owners on all sides of them. And their activities shouldn't cause harm that is left for those other owners, those other landowners, other municipalities to have to deal with through their own financial predicament and, you know, solution.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for letting me really drill down into this.
Mm-hmm.
So one interesting question, at least in my mind, what about when we get into potential issues of trade-off? So for instance, offshore wind, and that project is currently kind of, I mean, on ice is not a very good apt pun, but
on hold.
On
yeah.
hold. It's not moving forward currently, but I found that project to be a really fascinating example of the complexities of the trade-offs to a quick transition to a fossil-free future, right? Because yeah. we are talking about real potential harms in various ways and huge benefits as well, right? So pros and cons there. And so how would this amendment, or how would you envision this amendment would affect things like that, where you're talking about something, say a project that does have a demonstrable benefit to the environment, but also could have a short-term or localized negative impact.
Right. I mean, anything we do, whether it's clean energy or old-style fossil energy or, you know, all the activities that humans do have some environmental impact.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to recognize we need to shift our ways to a more sustainable, more positive, more at least regenerative way of doing what we need to do to support ourselves and our cities and our society. We added language into the third paragraph of the amendment that I'm going to read to you, quote it to you. It says, courts shall consider sustainable measures toward clean water, clean air, thriving ecosystems, and a more stable climate to be compelling state interests. Those are key words that the court picks up to determine priorities. Compelling state interests entitled to paramount consideration and weight. So we put this in when we were discussing the language with Senator Golden, Representative Gamba, and others, that they didn't want the people of the state to be able to put a stop to wind projects or grid towers in eastern Oregon or additions of more solar or the, you know, any clean energy endeavor that's trying to actually move us forward in a better way shouldn't be held up in court or tied up in court to resolve it. So we put the language in there for the court to understand that if this project is meant to be addressing our long-term future in a more sustainable manner, it obviously has benefits to the future generations over the existing systems, then they are going to be given a serious look and basically be classified as compelling state interests. And that will allow some of those projects to go forward. Depends on if they're good or bad projects. But the notion that we're adding this language, this amendment language into the Constitution is also going to set the expectation of the court that even if they allow that wind turbine or, you know, series of wind turbines to go in off the coast, it should come with an analysis of how can we do this with the least harm. So in other words, you don't just get to pick the best wind location. You have to evaluate the fish and the migration routes and the, you know, the aquatic systems that are under the, and try to find the least or the least harm impact solution. The one that Senator Golden and Mark Gamba are more interested in, or just very focused on, is the power grid, because we need more grid towers to add, to be able to produce more clean energy and get it onto the grid out of Oregon. And that potentially, those towers could go in into endangered species habitat in eastern Oregon. And again, we've had to try to talk to some of the folks around the state and say there are, this could be a good project. It can certainly be done in least harmful ways. And with a amendment on the books that tells the court it is the expectation of the state, the people of the state, and the court to enforce, the ability to still go forward and do projects that we need to have done, but do them in a much more environmentally conscious manner. In the national level, we have something called the NEPA Act, National Environmental Policy Act. Oregon is one of the states that does not have its own version of that. California has its own, and it does a serious environmental look at projects to figure out all the different nuances of it. So that could be one of the outcomes of having this amendment, is that Oregon now defines a NEPA Act of its own so that it is evaluating projects and determining what the least harm options are.
Yeah. Well, I love to hear that you all put a lot of thought into that, because I do think that that is a really interesting point of friction, is really thinking through all the trade-offs. And I will say, from what I've heard and read, California's version of NEPA has some pretty big pros and cons in terms of, I think it's probably stopped a lot of bad things, but also has been used by, you know, NIMBY folks to stop a lot of good things as well. So, you know, pros and cons to all of this, but we unfortunately are running short on time, but I want to make sure I at least ask, you know, what is, you touched on this earlier, but tell us again what the path forward is for this amendment, and then how listeners can learn more and get involved.
Sure. And if there's any extra minutes, I would throw in a couple of the examples from Hawaii and Pennsylvania as well, some of the other winning lawsuits that have happened with constitutional environmental rights. But we are on a path to bring this into, hopefully it's going to be drafted as a bill here shortly in the next couple of weeks. It'll be introduced by Senator Golden into the Senate Natural Resources Committee. They're also looking at doing a climate superfund bill. He's also a sponsor of that bill. So it's likely to go into his committee as well. So those are two subjects that will get reviewed in the Senate first.
And so just to clarify, this bill would not be the constitutional amendment. You are looking for a legislative referral to voters, right, which is when the legislature votes to send a bill to the ballot, right?
Correct.
For voters to decide on themselves.
That's right.
I just wanted to make sure and clarify that. And you are also, correct me if I'm wrong, gathering signatures to do a direct referral as well if the legislative referral doesn't pass, or...
We have in mind to do that. We haven't begun. Mm-hmm. So we have the luxury, a little bit of time with this being when we started, given this is years a long session, we can sort of see whether there's any chance of this passing through the legislature. If not, then as soon as we recognize it's not, we're likely to begin the citizen petition for it.
Got it. Well, that segues into how can folks learn more and get involved?
Yeah, so we have a website at OCERA United. So OCERA is spelled OCERA United.org, where you can read the language of the amendment. You can sign up to get involved as both an individual as well as an organization. And you can email us if you have any questions at team, at OCERAUnited.org. Yeah, that's how you get a hold of us. And I really appreciate, Michael, a chance to come talk with you.
Well, I'm so happy to be able to talk with you as well. I guess just for the podcast version, at least, which we don't have to be as time limited. You were saying you wanted to mention a couple other cases, so please.
Okay. I covered briefly the Montana Supreme Court decision, but there's some key words that they put in there that I just would... It's a 78-page document. Nobody wants to pick that up, but I'm going to read to you some of the key statements that the Supreme Court made. And it was a 6-1 decision in a very conservative state. So they're more conservative than Oregon, and they came down on the side of the youth in a 6-1 decision. And they were saying the state's greenhouse gas emissions are proven in court to be a substantial factor in causing climate impacts to Montana's environment and harm and injury to youth plaintiffs. The 6-justice majority found the law, which limited analysis of greenhouse gas emissions during environmental reviews, violates the Montana Constitution. It violates the Constitution, meaning the right to a clean and healthful environment, and enjoined the state from acting. So in other words, the state of Montana's fossil fuel projects, they do fracking, they do oil drilling, they do a little of everything there. And they had a law on the books that said that the state could not consider carbon emissions or emissions in general when it came to permitting or approving projects. And that was the law that got overturned in that decision. And the ruling clarifies that the Constitution sets a clear directive for Montana to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions. This is the court speaking to the state, sets a clear directive for Montana to reduce its GHG emissions, which are among the highest in the nation on a per capita basis, and to transition to a clean and renewable energy future. Now, any one of us, I mean, I've been an activist for decades, as I said, and I've been to Salem, I've been to capitals in other states. I have lobbied and lobbied and lobbied, and you can do that until you just are exhausted. It comes down to we need the court on our side. The court has to tell the state that it has to act, and we have no laws and we have no constitutional language in Oregon to make them do that, and that's what we're doing. In Hawaii, the state of Hawaii was getting ready in its current legislative session to go through its 10-year transportation plan, which should sound familiar to Oregon because this coming long session, Oregon is doing the very same thing. In Hawaii, they had been advertising for quite some time that the state had a goal of 0 net emissions by 2045. The problem was their own transportation package for the next 10 years had nothing to do with that target. They were not putting plans together to guarantee hitting that target by 2045. Mm-hmm. So the court stepped in and said, State of Hawaii, you need to go back to the drawing board. You've got 1 year. They gave them a time limit and said, you have to redo your transportation plan so it's consistent with this stated goal that you have already made. In Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is one of the original states, the earliest state to have a right to a healthy environment in its constitution. And it's been tested many times there. And one of the things that it stopped is declaring the fracking that was going on causing groundwater harm to be unconstitutional. So the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania declared that unconstitutional based on their right. We don't have these rights in Oregon, and it's high time that we do. And that's what we're working on.
Well, thank you for that. I'm glad that you were able to give us that extra context. And, you know, it makes me think of maybe because I'm doing a lot of home repairs these days, but you know, the most important thing that you can have is a really safe, secure, strong foundation. And we're missing a key part of that foundation in our laws. And so, so all of the remedies, legal remedies that we have are necessarily just kind of patchwork, right? Until we can actually have a solid baseline foundation for the environment.
Yeah. When you think of fundamental rights in the Constitution, you think of the right to free speech and freedom of assembly and freedom of religion and right for guns. And yet, for some reason, we never decided that what really truly supports our lives, which is the environment and the ecology of the planet, should also be considered fundamental rights.
Almost as if our country was founded on a fatal...
A different agenda.
Yeah, yeah. We'll maybe just say that for now. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck, and please keep us posted as this moves along. And I'd love to have you back for any updates.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Linda. Take care. And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. You can find all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your local community radio station, hopefully, or at our website, coastrange.org. I would love it if you would make sharing Coast Range Radio one of your New Year's resolutions. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio.
Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO